Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. My guest in studio would like to welcome Pat Doherty. Pat Doherty, who indeed has enjoyed amazing popularity as a member of Parliament for the Sinn Féin Party, and indeed was returned as MP to represent the people of the constituency for the third time in last year's Westminster election, with a fine, healthy result in 48.4% of the vote. And Pat, you must be doing something right.
Well, I think the organisation is certainly well grounded in West Tyrone.
Yes.
It's made up of two district councils, OMA District Council, which is 21 members, of which we have 10. And then in the Strann District Council has 16 councillors, of which we have 8. And then in Assembly terms, we have 3 of the 6 seats. And then in Westminster terms, the figures you've just read out there,
yeah,
we hold that as well.
You know, I think anybody who has read a paper or listened to the very disturbing news from Northern Ireland, that has to do with, of course, with Martin McGuinness, the first Deputy Prime Minister of the Northern Ireland Assembly, has received new death threats. And I think we should point out that a great number of politicians in the North have, in fact, are under constant threat of annihilation, and that most of it indeed coming from dissidents, and in and unfortunately on the Republican side in Northern Ireland. How is this one considered to be different, Pat?
Well, not all of the threats would have come from dissident Republicans. Many of them would also have come from the Loyalists, given the recent upsurge in what's known in Belfast as the Flags issue. Just a few days ago, Michelle Gildenew received a death threat, and she's the MP for Manor South Tyrone. All of these things are always dangerous, but you can never let it dictate what you're doing or the work that you do. But you just keep a mindful and weary eye to what's happening around you.
Right. And indeed, though, what is, just so we address this in the very beginning, there could have been an extraordinary loss of life in last week's attempt to have a van with bombs ready to go off, were it not indeed for the PSNI, Police Service of Northern Ireland, for their detection. Again, almost incredible to in a place that has made extraordinary progress politically on this, which is now the 15th anniversary coming up next month of the famous Good Friday Agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. We're the 15th anniversary is in the middle of April, actually the 15th of April. I suppose there's a number of things you would have to observe. One, that this device looked quite sophisticated for mortar bombs and a van with the roof cut out ready to launch. Yet, it was rammed by the PSNI, so it indicates some huge degree of infiltration. But nevertheless, it was all very, very, very dangerous. We have said to the dissident Republicans to explain their agenda to the people. What are they trying to achieve that the Republican movement isn't also trying to achieve, which is the unification of our country? We have had armed struggle, conflict for many decades. That came to a conclusion when the British and Irish government facilitated by the American administration, brought about the negotiations that led to the Good Friday Agreement.
Mm.
All of the things contained in the Good Friday Agreement have the potential to bring about the reunification of our country, but democratically and peacefully. And there's a facility there within the agreement to have a border poll, which we have put a huge focus on recent times.
Right.
We've been building up to that now for a number of years. There was a major conference here in New York, I think 2 years ago.
Right.
One in San Francisco. An exceptionally large one in London, which mm-hmm. surprised us all as to the size of it. And all of these things will be revisited, but within both England and the UK generally, and of course here in America. But the big focus now is at home to persuade the British government that now is the time to have that border poll. Ironically, David Trimble had called for it some 10 years ago. Probably for a different motivation, but nevertheless he did call for it.
Mm.
The DUP sort of hesitated at the start and said that they might, but then they pulled in their horns on it. It says quite clearly in the Good Friday Agreement that it is there, but the power lies with the British government. It says in the legislation the Secretary of State, British Secretary of State, but that means the British government, and that obviously that this could be repeated, but it would have to be at least every 7 years.
Mm.
Now, in a sense, if we get that process going, because if you match that with what's happening with the growth of Sinn Féin and republicanism and nationalism generally, and you can only have to look over the various figures in the growth of Sinn Féin in the north and indeed in the south, but it's in the north that that'll be the cutting edge of this.
We might just mention that a couple of days ago, a very significant, first of all, a very significant turnout for the mid-Ulster election and indeed in a vacancy created by Martin McGuinness, the favourite, Francie Molloy, actually won that election with 47%, which is amazing. You nearly caught up to you there with your own 48.4% of last year, but there is it's very strong. Obviously, the growth of Sinn Féin on the island of Ireland is something which indeed many would question were the issue as provided in the Good Friday Agreement about the border poll, if that were let slide, many would question why that would be. Yes, it has stirred up an enormous amount of controversy. Any time the issue of United Ireland comes to the fore, there are those who are very quick to point out that at best the peace process, and it can be called that, in Northern Ireland is as fragile today as it has been, at any period over the last 15 years, and perhaps something as controversial an issue as the issue of unification of United Ireland might indeed disrupt, if not clither altogether, as we say in Mayo, the peace and the peace process.
Some people do say that, but I mean, I find it extraordinary that they would put such a fear on the reunification of their own country. It's extraordinary, particularly when both the Irish and British governments negotiated this, that this facility was there. The peace process needs to be constantly tended and related to and worked on. But there's a great strong dynamic there to move things forward to, you know, we have achieved power sharing. We have a very strong north-south dimension in terms of the executive and the Irish government cabinet meeting twice a year.
Right.
There's the sectoral meetings where individual ministers can meet with each other on a regular basis. I just attended a meeting there, ironically, in my home parish of what's known as the British Irish Parliamentary Assembly, where you have MPs from Scotland, England and Wales with TDs and senators and MLAs from the north and representatives, ironically, of the Isle of Man, Jersey and Guernsey.
Wow.
Now, these things happen and are going on all the time. So all of the political architecture of the Good Friday Agreement is unfolding.
Right.
There are some outstanding matters, like we were promised an Irish Language Act, which hasn't happened. We were promised.
Well, why did that bog down?
Well, the unionists have set their face against it. And there's a facility in the Assembly known as a motion of concern that if one community feel that an issue is of huge concern, they have to have 30 signatures, which obviously they have, and that then means that you must have a consensus on both traditions, both the Republican Nationalist tradition and the Unionist tradition. So that's the blocking mechanism. The other issue is the Bill of Rights, which was committed to in the Good Friday Agreement and hasn't been delivered. We've also argued very strongly for the transfer of more fiscal powers to the north, and we know that the British Treasury are against that, probably because they're afraid of what's happening in Scotland in terms of their move to independence, and probably because the Treasury is very set, that is, the British Treasury is very set in its ways. So all of these demands are of a political nature, and we believe there's enough dynamic there within the Good Friday Agreement to facilitate them.
Yeah. Can you describe for us, can you give us a profile of the Sinn Féin Party as it is not just perceived, but where it stands in terms of government in Northern Ireland, particularly, and what role that plays in the peace process?
Well, obviously, there are 10 ministerial positions, and then the one that was negotiated around the transfer of policing and justice, which is a slightly different mechanism, which is held by agreement of the DUP and Sinn Féin, that the alliance hold that. And then there's the First and Deputy First Minister. Of the 10 full ministerial positions, we hold 3 of them. We hold education, we hold agriculture and rural development, and arts and culture and sport. The SDLP hold 1, which is the environment, and the DUP and the UUP hold the other 6. So when the cabinet or the executive meets, there are, if you like, on the nationalist side, there are 5 ministers, and then Mark McGuinness as the Deputy First Minister, and then there are 6 unionists and Peter Robinson as the First Minister. Mm-hmm. Now, the name First and Deputy First Minister is probably a misnomer, because legally they have exactly the same power, the same power.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a very strong nationalist voice in government now in the north. And that voice is growing.
Mm.
Now, we're very aware that the unionists feel in some way threatened by that. And therefore, you may have seen in recent times our party chairperson, Declan Kearney, launching a number of initiatives around unionist outreach, unionist engagement, unionist dialogue, which is met privately with quite a substantial response and not so much publicly. And that's something that any Republican in an elected position would know in the north, that it is relatively easy to get dialogue with unionism at all levels of society, provided it's based on confidentiality and you don't talk about it, which reflects the fear of their own community, the fear of the future. But that's something we have to deal with, because it's a reality.
It is. How much let us say, because it's beyond a perception, as you rightly pointed out, there are still a lot of, great number of dissidents. And, you know, whether we say a great number doesn't take many rotten apples in a barrel to create indeed havoc. But all of the dissidents, first of all, who are they? Where are they coming from? And how can they even exist? And some would say they're even growing as a new generation. But how can they do that if there is not an agenda?
Well, the ask, where did they come from? Some of them obviously came from the Republican movement because they didn't accept the democratic decisions of the movement to move into the peace process, and didn't accept the outworking of the Good Friday Agreement. Some of them would be young people who have maybe a very idealistic view of what should happen. And unfortunately, for the name, the broad name of Republicanism, some of them are just straight gangsters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bad combination. It's an unhealthy combination. And it's a very dangerous combination. The reason I say they don't have any agenda is that they never pontificate on
right.
what they want. They refuse to meet. Quite clearly, by the incident in Derry, they're totally infiltrated. How did the PSNI know? How did they know to ram the van? And there's been various incidents, particularly in the south in recent times, down in Tipperary and County Meath and different places in Dublin, where there have been arrests and people caught. And we have said, look, the war's over. The war's been fought. The British were fought to a standstill. They agreed to come to the negotiating table with the Irish government, which the American administration under Senator George Mitchell facilitated. We have an agreement. The people of Ireland, North and South, voted on the agreement. Massive majority of 92% in the South and 71% in the North. So if they have a better way forward, then they need to explain it to us.
Yeah.
They need to hold it up for rational dialogue.
What is, again, if you could, what is the profile of the membership generally of dissidents? And again, not just on the Republican side, but obviously, on the Unionist side as well. Are they middle class? Are they, are many of them unemployed?
Well, there would be, I would say the majority would be from the working class community. I'm not saying that there isn't middle class people there, but I mean, they're not big anyway. I mean, they're not big in numbers.
I know that.
And in any of the elections that they have stood in, they have done very, very, very badly. Now, they say they intend in the north, some of them anyway, to stand in the next new council, because there's been a proposed reform of local government in the north where the existing 26 district councils will be reduced to 11 so-called super councils. I could tell you now that they're going to be absolutely destroyed if they go to the opinion polls. Maybe some people say, well, that's what they should do, stand and just see how little support they do have.
Are they known to the police service of Northern Ireland?
I think they are entirely and totally infiltrated, and they are well known to not only the police service, but the intelligence services. Which is another very dangerous thing, because we negotiated in terms of the policing and justice, total accountability.
Right.
And the British don't particularly like their MI5s and MI6s to be accountable to anybody. Mm. So anything that draws
but
them
But that didn't
back
start today or yesterday.
Oh,
I mean, we're talking
not.
About, the unfolding of something, of a great number of issues in terms of infiltration, in terms of collusion that the dog in the street knew for decades. It's still highly volatile.
Very, very volatile. And, that very phrase that you used, the dog on the street, at a meeting with senior PSNI officers in Derry, that there's a committee in the Oireachtas in Dublin known as the Good Friday Implementation Committee.
Right.
It is the one committee that MPs from the North can sit on. we had a meeting with the PSNI, and that was put to them very forcefully using those very words you use, the dogs in the street now. And their very simplistic answer was the dogs can't give evidence.
There is, and there has been, an issue that, again, doesn't seem like it's going to go away. And perhaps I can get your read on it. And that is the rioting because of what is now known as the flag issue. First of all, where did that come from and how, and explain it to us.
Okay. Well, if you're, there's a bit of a joke in that the words the flag issue is known as the flags.
Okay.
It started, a debate started in the Belfast City Council after the last local government election in 2011, where the majority of the council is now made up of nationalists. The biggest single party is Sinn Féin. Mm-hmm. SDLP are quite strong, but the collective nationalist position is bigger than the unionist position. And you have seven members of the Alliance Party in there. And Sinn Féin have always had a position of either both flags, meaning the tricolour,
right,
and the Union Jack, or no flags.
Right.
And they had brought this forward. The Alliance moved in to try and diffuse this very intense debate by putting forward a proposal saying that the flag should fly only on what is known in British terminology as designated days,
mm-hmm,
which happens up at Stormont. Days like the Queen's birthday and the Queen's this and the Queen's
right.
that.
Preset.
Preset, mm-hmm, all arranged, actually. And the notorious Mandelson brought forward the number of designated days in the early stages after, mm-hmm, the Good Friday Agreement. And it's a policy that many unionist councils in the North have been following for well over 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when this was brought up, and as the debate was heading towards the actual vote, a combination of the UUP and the DUP, but mostly DUP, seen a chance to undermine Naomi Long, who is the MP for East Tyrone. She beat Peter Robinson, mm-hmm, in the last election. And they put out 40,000 leaflets in East Belfast, inciting the unionist stroke loyalist community, using very crude language of tearing down the Union Jack. And that led to...
The issue being... All right, let's just take it. The Union Jack has flown
in Belfast,
in Stormont for forever and a day.
In Stormont, only flies 17 days a year.
Okay.
In Belfast, it flew every day of the year.
Mm-hmm.
With the new nationalist majority, they passed a vote saying it should fly only on the 17 designated days.
Mm-hmm.
The unionists became outraged, tried to undermine Naomi Long and East Belfast,
okay,
because
okay,
it was the Alliance vote that facilitated this,
okay,
and incited the unionist and the loyalist community. So having brought people out onto the streets, Peter Robinson then lost control of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
was there an alternative? Was there, going back to what you had mentioned earlier, could and would this have been a better position were it saying, okay, let's have both flags. After all, we are talking about a Good Friday Agreement. We're talking about a different and much better Northern Ireland than before the Good Friday Agreement. What happened to, or was there a rejection of the notion of having both flags flying? Regardless of whether this was on designated days or...
Yes, there was. Our policy is, as I've said, either both flags or no flags.
You're right.
That wasn't accepted.
But
the compromise proposal was then accepted because
okay,
Alliance brought forward that and they voted with Sinn Féin and the SDLP.
Okay. So when you say, so was there not a possibility to revisit... hindsight is a great thing for all of us.
Hindsight is a great thing, and we always reserve a seat for Mr. Hindsight at all our party meetings. It is a great thing. But you have to understand that the demographics have changed utterly in Belfast. It's no longer a unionist city. It is a shared city. We have never said there shouldn't be British symbols, but we are very strongly saying there must also be Irish symbols. And both Belfast City Council and indeed Stormont is just coming down with unionist symbols. And it needs they need to realise they signed up for parity of esteem. They signed up for equality. And there needs to be a manifestation of Irishness, because Belfast is an Irish city.
It boils down to that, and it is simple.
And unionists are no longer the majority in the city council.
Okay. I just want to revisit the fact that, a decade ago, very prominent leader of the unionists, and David Tremble, calling for a shaking out, as it were, of the issue of a united Ireland. Obviously, David Tremble at that time felt this might be a good time to roll it out, because it seemed like there were a number of issues which were leaning towards, for instance, a majority of Catholics in Northern Ireland, something that nobody could have assumed or predicted before the Good Friday Agreement, and that was, okay, it was well and truly accepted that the majority of residents in Northern Ireland would and could decide at any point. This was agreed to in the Good Friday Agreement. They could decide whether or not a united Ireland, whether or not the direction for Northern Ireland should take a particular stand one way or the other. As we look at now, the most recent census, it would seem that we don't have that long to wait before we are going to have a majority of Catholics in Northern Ireland. I want you to just address that portion. Well, some say even if you had the majority in the morning, there are a great number of Catholics who would choose not to opt for a united Ireland, because they don't see any plus side in it at all, other than nationalism.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of questions in there, and you've touched on a lot of raw nerves. There is no, and it's sometimes quite dangerous to equate Catholics with being Republican, or indeed Unionists with being Unionist.
Equally, we might add there,
there's also a fact that in the last census, which only came out a few months ago, for the first time ever, Protestants are less than 50% in the north, they're 48%. But it also said Catholics are 45%. It also said that at every level of education, from primary school right through to universities, the majority is quite heavily in favour of the nationalist Catholic tradition. So that is a reality. That's a demographic that is happening anyway.
Yeah.
We have said,
with or without approval.
With or without approval. We have said that we would like this border poll, but we didn't say we wanted it immediately. We said we wanted it in the latter half of the next mandate, which is probably this 2 years, possibly 3 years left, and I'll come back to that point in this mandate. So you're talking about 5 or 6 years' time. So in the interim, we want a dialogue, we want a debate, we want the unionists to be involved in this debate. We want nationalists and Republicans to be involved in the debate. And many people will say the South isn't interested. The economic situation in the South is dire. They're coming out of a bailout program that they sold the sovereignty to the IMF and Europe and all of that. But where will we be in 5 or 6 years' time? And even if a border poll happened and it was not carried, then we have started a discourse a dialogue. We know that from our own dialogue with unionists, and that there's probably somewhere around 7 to 9% of unionists who want a united Ireland. They're not going to shout it from the rooftops. There is probably a bigger percentage within the Catholic community, known traditionally as Catholics, who are fearful of the break with the UK because of the economic situation.
Sure.
But let's see how the economy will develop. I mean, Britain just lost its AAA rating 10 days ago. I think the weakness in the euro has masked a real deep weakness in sterling. And we're going to see an awful lot of that unfolding. So let's have the dialogue. Let's have the debate. Who's afraid to speak?